This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
There we are on a Wednesday. Players back on the practice field. Game plan installation begins.
Let's go!
As we get ready for Bills-Dolphins, Super Wild Card Weekend. Saturday, 1 p.m. Sunday, 1 p.m. Sorry. Gosh, got to get this straight.
Get
man.
It. Well,
I am so not used to 1 p.m. starts on Sunday. I'm still discombobulated from the regular season. Out of control. Giant news on two fronts concerning this game. First, Tua is out for Sunday. No Tua Tagovailoa, and I can't say I'm terribly surprised, Steve. I know they claim that he's had two documented concussions this season. As far as all of us in Buffalo are concerned, he's had three. It was mislabeled a back injury back in week three, if you remember. That's three concussions in relatively close proximity. You put him out on the field and he has another one. His career might be over. Four concussions in one season in close proximity, that could be career ending.
Yep.
He needs to rest for the rest of this offseason and hopefully come back in the spring and, you know, give some time between brain injuries, for goodness sake.
Right. And, you know, I know Bills fans, there's no love lost between Bills fans and Miami fans, but even, you know, Bills fans have got to, you know, you want that guy to be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
And the way it was trending, it didn't seem likely that he was going to be available for this game. And, you know, Mike McDaniel already ruled him out in his press conference today. The other interesting news is he said that they are preparing for this game with Skylar Thompson as their starting quarterback, who is their third stringer. He has appeared in five games so far this season, I believe. And his average passing yardage total in those five games is just under 70 yards. Now, some of it is relief duty, because he had to come on in relief for Teddy Bridgewater two times and started a game. So the way you look at that, it's certainly horrible timing for the Dolphins, who finally made the playoffs for the first time since 2016. They would be looking for their first playoff victory Sunday, Steve. Are you ready for this? Since 2000.
Well, there you go.
First playoff win since 2000 is what they would be seeking. As for Teddy Bridgewater's availability, Mike McDaniel said, "We are hoping he can be available on Sunday. He can't have any setbacks." So it sounds like Teddy Bridgewater is like a close call to be ready for Sunday as a backup, which is why it makes sense to just move forward with Thompson as your starter, because Bridgewater's a little iffy this week. So if Bridgewater's not available, the guy they just signed off the street last week will have to serve as the backup. That's Mike Glennon.
So that's, well, at least Glennon's got an arm.
That's where they are.
Glennon can sling it.
I mean, you couldn't ask for a worse situation going into the playoffs at the most important position
on
the field.
I'm shocked Teddy Bridgewater isn't ready to play. He dislocated his pinky
on his throwing hand.
Man,
I'm
I don't know.
That specifying.
That doesn't seem serious enough.
No.
To me. Maybe if he can't grip it, maybe it's his grip. But even if you tape those together.
Yeah, tape it to your ring finger, right?
Right. And I don't know if they can't help it a little bit with some pain management. But
I don't know. You can't you can't shoot a finger. Because if you put too much in there, now his whole hand goes numb and now he can't feel the ball at all.
Well, you don't put too much in there.
Well, I don't know. Is
in fact, that's the
small?
Whole thing. That they don't make it numb. They just take the edge off of it so you can still feel it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Really. Although Bridgewater has started a couple games and he hasn't finished one yet.
That's right. He started two games. The first one against the Jets, he gets up slow in the end zone and the officials say he has to come out because he got up slow and he was actually fine. Like, he never went in the concussion protocol. He didn't wobble at all like Tua did or anything. So that was a little unfortunate there. And the other game, yeah, the finger against the Patriots, couldn't come back and finish the game. To word it properly, Teddy Bridgewater, according to McDaniel, is preparing himself to be ready for Sunday, but only if he has no setbacks. So it sounds like he's going to be a close call for Sunday, which could, again, make Mike Glennon the backup quarterback to Skylar Thompson. And once you're that far down the pecking order, it may not mean a hill of beans.
It might not, but, you know, they get it. Yeah, whatever. It's a game that anybody can win, and you hate to – you're not throwing dirt on these guys. It's a playoff game, whether they're wounded or not. There's 52 other guys on that roster who want to play well. So, yeah, I get it. It's a cruddy way for Miami to end the season if it does indeed end their season. But coming in, and this is the difference. This is a tale between two franchises. You can say what you want. I like the way the Bills sit coming into this better than the Dolphins, obviously. But let's look at what happened. You got their starting quarterback goes down with what Bills fans believe after he's staggered. If you watch that, I don't know how you look at that and you tell me that's a back injury, because not only did he stumble coming up, his offensive linemen are holding him up because he's dead on his feet. He goes in and says, no, it's a back injury. He comes back out 4 days later, he's out, and he's never been the same since. And he got another one and another one. So now he's down. That's just the way they do business. You're coming in, and now as a result of that culture, they're coming into the playoffs getting worse and worse and worse, injured and more injured and more injured. They got offensive linemen injured. They got everybody injured. This guy's injured. That guy's hurt. This guy's nursing something. That guy's got two different injuries. They're all going. They're all playing. And all of that happens. Meanwhile, at one Bills drive, you got guys coming back onto the field now. You got like Jamison Crowder, Micah Hyde fighting back from injuries, got an outside chance if the season continues and lengthens, they got a chance to get him back. You got other guys who were out for a period of time and came back in getting healthier. This is a team that are giving guys every week. You got like a handful of guys who are getting veteran rest days, taking time off, getting rested, recouped. You got guys rotating in, their load management, even during important games. And now you hit the playoffs like they did a year ago on a crescendo. Now, there's no guarantees. They could come in and lay an egg against Miami and lose. But this is a coaching staff and a culture that speaks towards getting better and taking care of their players so that when the time comes, they're ready to come back if they're able. And they have.
Right.
As opposed to what we've seen in Miami this year with Tua and how, from the outside looking in, from a casual fan's perspective, they could not have messed that up more.
No. No, they could not. Speaking of players coming back, Coach McDermott announced today that two players currently on injured reserve, Micah Hyde and Jamison Crowder, will begin practicing today. They were out there on the practice field. Micah Hyde wearing a red non-contact jersey. Jamison Crowder, not. He's just ready to roll. And I'm just going to say this. Steve and I, our offices are at the one end of the field house. So we're in and out of the field house all day long. And I'm just going to tell you, the last month and a half, Jamison Crowder has been putting in work. Like, he is out here every morning with the strength and conditioning staff, putting in the work. So he has a chance to come back, hopefully sometime during the postseason. And that's what Coach called it. First of all, Hyde and Crowder will not play this Sunday. Coach McDermott said as much, and I totally get that. With the way they ramp up players, Steve, I don't think any of us thought for a second that these two guys would have a shred of a chance of playing this week.
No.
But maybe in a couple of weeks if you're playing in the AFC title game.
Earliest possible would be a week from this Sunday, and then if they do it according to their modus operandi, they'd get a couple of snaps, a handful of snaps during that game, start to rotate in, and then after that, then they got a chance at it. But, yeah, you and I, we're laughing at ourselves. We were adamant. Yeah,
we got snowed.
We were adamant. Micah told us, he goes, they're protecting me for myself. They're not going to let me play. They said absolutely no chance until next year. No contact, at least for 6 months. Well, that puts it into March. So he's off the table. He goes, nah, there's just no way. And this was like, what, Three weeks ago. So we're like, oh, okay. So we were in it yesterday. We were going to bat. There's no way Micah.
That dirty dog.
Micah's not going to come back and play. Today he's out there catching passes in a jersey. I'm like, dude, you liar. You are such a
liar. He snowed us,
he's
man.
He's laughing.
He snowed us.
No doubt he's ahead of schedule. And I'm sure the doctors just aren't just like saying, all right, if you want to, go ahead. Exactly. There's some concrete reasons why they're allowing him to come back and play and start to get ready to play football.
Any injury.
Right.
The way this athletic training staff and medical staff works, there's no way they're clearing somebody just because they want to play. That just does not happen.
That's right.
Especially when you got a guy coming off neck surgery.
A herniated disc.
Yeah. He had to have surgery to have that taken care of. And
they
to his credit,
and they were right.
To his credit, with his rehab, he's ahead of schedule. And I got to tell you, too, you know, I was talking about how Crowder, you know, the last month and a half has been just grinding there in the morning by himself with the strength and conditioning staff. Mike has been up on the second floor because, if you remember, right after surgery, he couldn't do any high impact stuff like running. That's too much impact on your spine. He couldn't do that coming out of surgery. That guy was riding the bike for like an hour and a half on the second floor of the training center, like every day to maintain some measure of conditioning. Now, it's probably not the same as playing football, but at least he's not starting from square one.
It's a testament. Think about that, about Micah Hyde getting back on the field. It's pretty impressive. He got week two of the season, got a neck injury, herniated disc, and, you know, I've never had one. By all accounts, they hurt. Mm-hmm. He goes under the knife, gets surgery on, and the doctors from day one are telling him, hey, 6 months without contact, forget it. But on the outside chance, Hyde is in here, and I mean, like, he's not just standing around, right? He's on the bike. He's coaching him up. He's in film room. He's all engaged, 100%, staying in shape. And then as things happen – because of that, he has a chance to play at the end of the season, perhaps if the season's extended long enough, to get back on the field. It's unbelievable.
Pretty remarkable
stuff.
It's
really unbelievable.
Almost as remarkable as the latest update on DeMar Hamlin, which came out in a team-issued statement earlier today. DeMar is going home. Discharged from Buffalo General Medical Center, Gates Vascular Institute, in Buffalo today. He was admitted on Monday, went through a comprehensive medical evaluation as well as a series of cardiac, neurological, and vascular testing on Tuesday. The doctors there in the critical care unit said that we've completed a series of tests and evaluations, and in consultation with the team physicians, we're confident that DeMar can be safely discharged to continue his rehabilitation at home with the Bills. So DeMar's home. He's still recovering. You got to believe that as soon as he is able, he's probably coming down to One Bills Drive to love up on his teammates.
And they've got,
and they're probably running to his house tonight.
Right? He'll be in here as much as he'll be home. I mean, they've got an entire crew, staff, horde of experts in there that these guys all know and love. You know, it's just the rehab crew, the training staff, the medical staff. That's one of the things about One Bills Drive. Not only is it a great, big, huge, awesome facility, but Terry and Kim, they staffed it with a ton of people so that all these players can get what the top-flight athletes pay for themselves to get. Yeah. So these guys are taken well care of. If there's any place for them to be, it's in this building. And you can bet that DeMar is going to be here as often as he can get here. And then pretty soon it looks like he'll be able to come in here anytime he wants. If that's not always the case right now.
Yeah. So we'll try to keep our ear to the ground on that to see what comes from it, but certainly more positive news on the DeMar Hamlin front. Bills practice updates presented by LECOM, Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. We already told you Micah Hyde and Jamison Crowder are practicing today for the first time. They remain on IR. Today opens up a 21-day practice window for those two players, and anywhere in that time frame, they could be activated off of IR and onto the active roster if the team believes they are fit to play and ready to go. That would obviously prompt roster moves to make room for them on the 53. Not practicing today, Jordan Phillips and Jordan Poyer. Both players do not have new injuries. They're just dealing with the nagging injuries that they have been trying to play through. Jordan Phillips with the shoulder injury, and then Jordan Poyer with a knee injury. So those two guys getting an extra day of rest today, knowing they are really kind of summoning up an awful lot of gumption just to go out there and play on game days. Yeah. I mean, you and I saw it on Sunday. Jordan Phillips.
He's got one arm.
He's basically playing with one arm out there with that shoulder injury.
You can see.
I don't know how you do that as a defensive lineman.
I don't either. It's a gargantuan ask, and nobody's asking him to do it. He wants to be out there. That's the only reason he's going. I don't know. We haven't spoken to him yet, but that looks to me like that's one of those guys that, you know, as soon as the season's over, he gets his shoulder fixed.
Yes.
And
I would expect that.
Because
absolutely.
Both you and I saw when he went down in the Detroit game on Thanksgiving, he stayed down for a minute, and they went out there, and what I saw was they're manipulating his arm and popped it back in. Well,
was the New England game.
Was that the New England game?
Yeah, he dove at Mac Jones, remember, and landed on his stomach.
Oh, I thought that was a Detroit game.
He went to try to trip him. And he shot his arm out to try to trip him by the shoelaces. And the problem was 340 pounds landed on his shoulder.
So he does this, and, you know, he just ends up.
Right here,
see
he dives
out. You're right, it is. That right there. And that's it right there.
Yep.
They come out, they grab his arm, they hold it up gingerly, and they kind of manipulate it to pop it back into play. It looks like to me. We don't know.
No, we don't know the nature of the shoulder.
We don't, but that's what it looks like. And, you know, that's the way it is, man. You pop that thing out, and you can pop it back in, and it feels 1,000% better right away, but it's still damaged. And
yeah, the integrity of it is not there.
He's
been playing with a harness.
He's got a harness on and all that. So, but, man, oh, man, I'll say this. 2 weeks later, he's making plays. He's making plays. He's leaning on guys, making tackles with one arm up inside. It's just unbelievable. So him being out, you know, him taking a day off, you can see why. It's good stuff. The guy's really making a difference in there because he's so big and so athletic. When he can go, he can go.
And
man.
I'm just going to say this. He always likes playing the Dolphins. That was the team that gave up on him.
Mm-hmm.
He was a second-round pick of the Miami Dolphins at Oklahoma, and – yeah.
Give him today and tomorrow off.
Let's just say he doesn't forget easily.
Yeah.
Other news on the Bills front, to no one's surprise, Bills return man Nyheim Hines literally runs away with AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. I mean, I don't know if there was a bigger shoe-in candidate after returning two kickoffs for touchdowns this week and becoming only the 11th player in league history to do that in one game. The cool thing is, Steve, and I remembered this just having read up on him when, you know, they acquired him at the trade deadline. He had two punt returns in a game back in 2019 when he was with the Colts. So right now, Nyheim Hines is the only player in league history to have two kick returns for touchdowns in one game and two punt returns for touchdowns in one game in his playing career.
Boom diggity.
That is hard to do.
Yeah.
Hard. I don't have to tell you that.
I know
you
that.
Know better
yes,
than anybody.
I did know that.
What are the odds? They've got to be in like the tens of millions, right? Like, you think of all the kickoffs that have happened in 105 years of NFL football. He's the only guy.
Yeah.
To do the double-double.
That'll tell you how hard it is. Now, and there's some great ones. I mean, I chased Dion around for a lot of years. He never did it.
Billy White Shoes
Gale
Johnson.
Gale Sayers never did it.
Eric Metcalf,
Clarence Verdan, Timmy
Dante
Brown.
Dante Hall.
Might have had two kickoff returns in the same game.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was on that
I think he is on there. Devin Hester.
Yeah, he's up for the Hall of Fame.
Brian Mitchell.
Yeah, Brian Mitchell.
I mean,
Mitchell.
Good grief. Vi Sikahima. I mean, I got a list, man.
Yeah.
So it's there's and I'll tell you what, they don't just put guys back there. They put dudes.
Yeah.
I mean, they put some thoroughbreds back there. I mean, those guys that are back there, they're gifted. I mean, I was more of a punt catcher when I did it.
Now you're going to make me right? remember Chris Watson.
Right. I was more of a savvy veteran move to put back there. I wasn't a guy that was
going
to
a Micah Hyde on punt return.
A little bit, yeah. I'm telling you, man, some of those guys are – they are just
– they got juice.
They're weapons.
Yeah.
I mean, they're –
they got juice.
You put them back there, and there are some guys – there are guys like this. You would put them back there. When that guy's back there – and the guys are like on the punt return team or the kickoff return team, they turn around, they line up, and they look back and see where he's lined up, and they look back there, and they go, oh, yeah, okay. They're like, we got our guy. Let's go. They work hard. They think, we got a chance. They're difference makers, man, and they don't come along very often.
We mentioned it right at the end of the show yesterday when I had you guess. Top speed for Nyheim Hines in that game last week, 21.25 miles per hour. I can't go that fast on my bike.
They can really run, man.
You know what I mean? I can barely get to that on my bike. And I have a racing bike. And I got to work hard to get to 21 miles per hour. He does it on two legs. That's insane. And there's this. The Miami Dolphins come into this game ranked 25th in the league in punt coverage and last in the league in kickoff coverage. Does Nyheim Hines have an encore performance, or do they even kick to him?
Yeah.
What do you think? I don't know if they kick to him.
They'll kick. Well,
I don't know.
That's a really good.
You spend all week watching that on tape?
Yeah, and you can say this too. I mean, he broke a tackle on both of them.
Yeah, more so on the second one than the first one.
Right. First one, he kind of
stepped
out of
it. He just kind of bounced on the first one.
I'll tell you what, you don't just kick it down the middle.
No. You better pin him to a sideline.
Right.
Of course, they did try to do that on the second one, not very effectively. And
they kicked one out of bounds, too, after the two.
Well, that's when they didn't want to kick to him.
They finally kicked it out of bounds. Said, you know, you just take it on the 40, thanks.
Do you think he meant to kick it out of bounds?
It went out of bounds at like the 38.
I know, but... I don't know. There was a part of me thinking they were just trying to pooch it, so he'd have to run up, but he would have to run too far to field it cleanly, and then that would allow coverage to get down there. And, you know, he just kicked it too hard, and it went over the sideline. I mean, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
It was a special teams disaster
for
the Patriots.
Cost him the game. Cost him the game. So, you know, whatever. There's just no way around it. And I would say, yeah, you'll notice that the Dolphins will kick it a different way. This week, either they'll kick it short and high. They'll line drive it. They'll bounce it down there so it's hard to field. Hope to get the timing all messed up on the return. They'll do some stuff, I would think.
For those that don't know, former Bills special teams coordinator Danny Crossman, who worked here under Chan Gailey and Doug Marrone, and maybe Rex. I'm a little fuzzy on those details. How many tenures he was here for? He is the special teams coordinator in Miami. So, we had Armando Salguero on yesterday, NFL writer for Outkick.com, and he told us there's a very good chance that there are wholesale changes with special teams for the Dolphins when their season is over, which could come as soon as Monday, obviously, because of where they have underperformed in certain areas, not the least of which has been punt coverage and kick coverage, where they were ranked 25th and 32nd, last in the league. Steve, on punt return and kick return, they rank 31st in both. That is rough. Rough.
Yeah, that is rough.
Because, you know, you hear all the time about hidden yards.
That's a bunch of them. I'll say this.
You're not getting any for your offense or your defense.
Yeah, I'll say this, though. You don't want to walk into this without your guard up either.
Oh, no.
You got to spend some time, extra time on – because the last thing you want to do is give up a block punt or block field goal.
Well, and they
some
did,
other.
They did know. Block a field goal back in week three, if you remember. They blocked Tyler Bass's 38-yard attempt. Emmanuel Ogba was the one that blocked the kick. Now, he's out for the season with an injury.
Yeah, but he blocked a kick in a game they win by two.
Yeah.
So,
pretty important.
Yeah. There's a lot in this game, as you would expect for a division opponent. There's a lot packed into this.
This week's game sponsor is Northtown. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown, the official automotive dealer of the Buffalo Bills. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Steve, you know what we haven't gone over yet? And it's primarily because our focus is obviously on the postseason. Buffalo's opponents in 2023. Obviously, with the regular season this year coming to an end, we now know who Buffalo's opponents will be in 2023. And basically, we know it's the AFC East opponents. And then they're playing the AFC West as their intra-conference division. And they're playing the NFC East. So that means at home next year, in addition to the division teams, they'll get Denver, Las Vegas, and then Dallas and the Giants from the NFC East. And then they have the intra-conference team that finished in first place in the AFC South and the AFC North. That's Jacksonville, who they play at home, Cincinnati, who they play on the road. Tampa Bay is the extra NFC game, and that will be at home. And then the away teams for the NFC East opponents, Washington and Philly, and then the AFC West opponents on the road, fans are going to love this, Kansas City and the Chargers. So they'll be out to Kansas City again next year. Now, here's the other thing that we haven't discussed. The NFL states that at least once every 8 years, every NFL club must sacrifice a home game and play overseas. The Bills have an extra home game this year, 9 home, 8 on the road. And this next season, 2023, is the 8th year since they have last traveled. 2015, played Jacksonville in London. Jacksonville's on the schedule, Steve. They commonly play games in London, so I think they are a candidate.
And you know who else is? Dallas.
Dallas, yeah,
Mexico
Dallas.
Mexico City.
Yeah. That I could see that, sure. Tampa just traveled to Munich this season, so it's probably not them.
Could be the Raiders.
Denver just traveled overseas. They played in London. I don't think it's them. And the Giants played overseas. The Raiders did not. So it's maybe Las Vegas, Dallas. Or Jacksonville,
Is it going to be one of the – you don't even know.
I don't think it's going to be a division opponent.
Is it going to be a home game or away game?
It would be a home game because they have an extra one.
Right. We have the extra – the 9th home game, so we loop probably –
they will be traveling overseas somewhere next year because they're at the limit. They've gone a full 8 years, and you can't go more than 8 years without doing one game overseas. So they will lose one of those 9 home games.
I vote an NFL game in Japan. Go to Tokyo and – let's start.
Really?
Yeah, they're not going to happen. That's not going to happen for a long time. But
I think Munich's on the table. London's on the table.
Frankfurt is going to happen.
And Frankfurt's the other place, right, where they play in Germany? Then, that's where they did that this year?
Yes.
Was it Frankfurt or Berlin? Yeah, I think it was Frankfurt.
Well, Berlin has hosted games in the past.
Yeah.
There's three cities in Germany, Frankfurt, Berlin, and Munich, that are capable and willing. London is one, and then that's it, isn't it?
Is there Munich another? And Frankfurt host two each next year.
Two each. Okay.
So I think Munich is a – unless they're playing the Jaguars, next which would years. Undoubtedly be in London, you're looking at Dallas or Las Vegas, I think, to play overseas. Because Denver played there last year. The Giants played there last year, and Tampa played there.
Does Mexico City count as overseas?
I don't know.
Are they going to have another game in Mexico City?
And usually it's
like
a Dallas home game. Like Dallas would have to sacrifice one of their home games to play there.
Yeah, but
that's not happening.
But the Cowboys would be overjoyed to do one of their away games in Mexico City.
Yeah, I don't know.
Are they having a game in Mexico City next year?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I think so, but I don't know. Usually they do. But
all right.
But, yeah, one of those home games is probably going to be out of the country. We can say that. We have to take a break here. Before we do that, we do want to let you know what our topic of discussion is today. Where do the main threats with the Dolphins lie with Tua ruled out for Sunday? Is there still a lingering concern on your part with the Dolphins If so, what is it? Let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. It's Chris Brown and Steve Tasker with you here on a Wednesday, and it's One Bills Live presented by Kalata Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. He's at the 20, the 10, the 5, touchdown Snapdragon apples. This Bills season, head to your local Wegmans to experience the epic flavor and monster crunch of Snapdragon apples, the official apples of your Buffalo Bills.
One of the things I always do, I don't want to get up, if we got time to talk about this or not, but.
Sure we do.
I always go over and see how. You know, both sides of the ball stack up against each other, not Bills offense against Miami defense, but Bills offense, Miami offense, Bills defense against Miami defense.
Fair. What do you got?
Well, defensively, I'm not going to talk about their offense because without Tua and all, you know.
It's totally different.
Yeah, it's totally different. But their defense stacking up against the Bills, points allowed per game. The Bills are ranked second. We know they've had a pretty good year. They're behind – San Francisco, right, as the number one. Miami's 24th. Total yards per game, the Bills are 6th. Miami's 18th. Yards per play, the Bills are 9th. Miami's 14th. Yards rushing per game allowed, Bills are 5th. Miami is 4th.
Mm-hmm. They improved that number greatly over the last 3 weeks of the season.
And that would go all the way to a yards per rush as well. The Bills are 14th, and they are 6th. That's where – that's, you know, those are the things where they're kind of hanging in there with them. But yards allowed – yards passing per game, Bills are 15th, they're 27th, Miami. Passing per – passes per attempt, the Bills are 5th, they're 12th.
Yeah.
Interceptions, they're both tied, 29 apiece. Or no, I'm sorry, 17 apiece.
Yeah.
Tied for well, that's not true.
Bills finished the season dead even. That's not true. That's 27 takeaways, 27
giveaways. Let me write this right. That's right. Hold on. That's not right. The Bills are tied for 4th. Miami is 29th.
Yeah.
They don't have that many. I had that wrong.
Yeah.
And takeaways, the Bills are tied for 4th. Miami's 30th. Yeah. So I like going down and reading that stuff. They both got 40 sacks on the season. They're tied for 16th with each other.
So that's a series of streaks for the Dolphins.
It really is.
They won their first three. They lost their first three. They won their next five, lost their next five. And then they struggled to beat the Jets 11-6 last week. It was really 9-6, and they got a safety at the end on a botched lateral by the Jets. Go figure.
Yeah.
But they've tightened up on defense the last couple of weeks. Now, they've also played Mac Jones in that horrific Patriots offense, and then they played Joe Flacco in the Jets. So take it for what it's worth.
They're tied for 24th on their third down conversion allowed.
Yeah, they can't the Bills, get off the field.
The Bills are 7th.
That speaks to their pass rush.
Yeah, that's
or lack thereof.
Yeah. I'm red zone efficiency defensively. The Bills are 2nd. They're tough to score on. They're tough to score touchdowns on. The Dolphins.
Well, they have the number 2 red zone defense in football. The Bills.
Yeah, they do.
One team just squeaked ahead of them at the end of the season. They had been first in the league up until last week.
So the Bills are, you know, on both sides of the ball, the Bills are statistically better, but rankings that wise and how the league goes. And now that you've played all 17 games in the schedule, you kind of know who these teams are.
Uh-huh.
The unknown is, you know, what happens if, you know, with Skylar Thompson or Teddy Bridgewater in the mix. Certainly the Dolphins aren't going to tell you who's starting. They're going to tell you Teddy Bridgewater's on his deathbed. And then he'll start and try and play well. I don't know. This is one of those games where after it's over and the Bills win, they said, really, you really have no excuse for not winning this game with the shape that the Miami Dolphins and their roster are in right now.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones, though, Steve, because we have to discuss where Bills fans believe the main threats of the Dolphins lie, now knowing that Tua is not going to play. Are there any other lingering concerns about the Dolphins for you? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. We begin today with Jim in Webster. What do you got for us, Jim? You're on One Bills Live.
So what do you think the chances are we'll see Tariq Hill in either the backfield or in some sort of wildcat formation? And also, on a side note, what are the chances of Murph coming back this year to do any announcing? Take care, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call. No update on Murph. Don't have anything on that. As for Tyreek Hill, I think you got to expect any kind of wrinkle possible. Any kind of wrinkle possible, because they're going to be a desperate football team playing their third-string rookie quarterback.
They got to get the ball into Tyreek's hands with some space. You can bet the and fake punt, fake field goal.
End-arounds.
Surprise onside kick.
It's Philly special.
Right. Awareness plays where you've got to say, wait, what minute, where's the ball kind of thing. They will pull out all the stops to try and win this game. They're going to have to, at least on paper. And when you watch film and you do that, I mean, it's only fortifies that belief. But Tyreek's a difference maker. You can bet.
So is Waddle.
Yeah. They're going to get the ball into those guys' hands any way, shape, or form. Quick passes out of the backfield, bubble screens, all of that stuff. Tyreek is the guy. And whether you can, you know, keep them from doing that, who knows? Who really knows? But if I'm Mike McDaniel, that is job one for this week offensively.
Got nothing to lose.
You got to get the ball to Tyreek all the time and let him outrun people.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones and to Brian in Alabama. Brian, what do you got for us here on One Bills Live?
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. How you guys doing?
Doing well, thanks.
First, let me just say this. I truly believe that the Bills will pull off the victory. But to me, the threat still has to remain the same as if Tua was playing, because this offense seems to be designed to get the ball out of Tua's hands or Bridgewater or Thompson's hand quick. And I feel like over the past month or so, the secondary has kind of regressed. And so I do worry about that with the speed of Waddle and Hill. If McDaniel draws up a game plan of getting the balls out of his hands quick, then you still have to worry about Hill and Waddle with the threat of the deep balls and anything underneath. So to me, the threat still remains the same. And just wanted to get you guys' opinion on it, because I don't feel like the drop off is as significant as it would be if we were to lose Allen and go to Keenum. So just wanted to hear you guys' thoughts.
Yeah, okay. It's an interesting
point, Brian.
It's an interesting point, Brian, because you'd think, you know, they don't ask, or at least from a Buffalo perspective in relation to how they ask Josh Allen to play, they don't ask Tua to do that. So you would think he'd be easier to replace, because all you got to do is drop back and sling it on time to a spot. That may be the case. That may be the case, except that when you bring into, you know, focus the fact that, you know, on the way their schedule has been, they've had a chance to do that in these other games, and they lost five straight before they beat the Jets by scoring 11 points, and the last touchdown they scored, the 6 points they scored against the Jets, was on a fumbled lateral play, desperation play at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So it was a safety. They're struggling offensively, and and if it was as simple to replace Tua as we're making it out, they would have done it. It's not that simple. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
If the ball can come out fast, why can't it come out fast with Teddy Bridgewell? Why can't they get the ball out of Skylar Thompson's hands as fast as they do Tua? Tua is not nobody. He's a really accurate passer, and he can find tight windows and fit them through. Not everybody can do that. So they've got to figure out what Skylar Thompson can do. And so do the Bills, by the way. They got to figure out what Skylar Thompson can do well and not let him do that, because it'll be different than what Tua does well.
Yeah.
And Mike McDaniel's trying to figure that out now.
In his two starts, one was a loss to Minnesota, 24-16. The other was the win last week over the Jets. He was a combined 27 for 44. He completed 64% of his passes last week against a good Jets defense for 152 yards. He's averaging 4.9 yards an attempt. So everything is at the line of scrimmage or not far beyond that. They're trying to get the ball out of his hands quickly. They're trying to give him defined, easy reads on where he's going with the football. And, yes, that can help a young quarterback make an offense functional. But as far as making it dynamic, I think that's a whole other story. Your point, Brian, about the secondary for the Bills is well taken. You saw Kyir Elam and Dane Jackson still platooning, and due in part to the fact that, you know, Dane Jackson missed a couple of assignments. They sat him down. They brought Kyir Elam in. Kyir was in good position on the touchdown catch by Devontae Parker. He just got his head turned the wrong way and couldn't make a play on that two-yard touchdown catch that Parker made. And Parker isn't an athlete with elite physical traits. So it's not like he had some slouch catching a touchdown on him. I mean, the guy's a good player and physically gifted. But, yeah, I mean, you're down to – I mean, think of it this way. You're down to your third safety. I'm not knocking Dean Marlowe, but he's not Micah Hyde, and he's not Damar Hamlin.
And he didn't start the season with the team.
Right. So and you got Jordan Poyer playing on a bum knee. So it's far from ideal on the back end, for sure, especially with a defense that was built from back to front when it was first assembled. I mean, the secondary was the strength of this defense for years. But with Hyde still not in the lineup this weekend, Poyer playing on a bum leg, and Dane Jackson and Kyir Elam still platooning for a number of reasons, it's Taron Johnson and Tre'Davious White, and only recently has Tre'Davious started to round into form. So you're talking 40% of what you used to have back there, which was enormously reliable. So it's different. So your concerns are well-founded.
Yeah.
Fortunately for the Bills, they'll have another week because, to me, Skylar Thompson is not beating this team. He's just not.
It doesn't seem like it. But, you know, Skylar Thompson doesn't have to beat the Bills. All he could just sit and waiting for the Bills to beat themselves.
Because in
two of the three losses the Bills have suffered this year, they did it to themselves. They don't do it very much, obviously.
Yeah.
But
they had a hand in every one of their losses.
They had a hand in every one of their losses. The Jet game is the one where I can say, okay, the Bills, you know.
Yeah, but even then, the Jets played
their best game of the year, but all of that. But the Minnesota loss, oh my gosh. I can't believe that one got away. And, of course, the Miami game, the first meeting,
you got McKenzie in the
end zone, was beyond frustrating, as is expressed by the meme that Ken Dorsey has become after that game when he trashed the coach's booth. Yeah. That's how frustrating that loss was. So it's a tough team to beat. When you do, it's a team that needs to help you do it most of the time.
Yeah. Break time for us here. When we come back, more of your phone calls as we are asking you, your no Tua is out for Sunday, so where do the remaining threats lie with the Dolphins that give you some measure of concern? We're back with your phone calls next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Bills fans, Connect Life needs your help during the month of January. Every blood donor during this month will receive a pair of Bills branded socks. Connect Life is the only blood donation agency that keeps your donation here for patients in Western New York. To make your appointment, please go to connectlife.org today. We have a little bit of NFL coaching news. We had heard rumblings out of New York that Jets owner Woody Johnson wanted Robert Saleh to fire offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur, believing that the offense is broken. We were seeing reports that Saleh was against making such a move, but now there are reports that the Jets are, in fact, parting ways with offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur. That, according to league sources, NFL reporter Aaron Wilson is reporting this. He ran their offense the past two seasons after a previous stint as 49ers passing game coordinator. With him no longer the OC there, that would probably take Jimmy Garoppolo out of the equation as a possible veteran signee in free agency for the Jets, since that would have been a relatively easy transition scheme-wise, knowing LaFleur brought the San Francisco offense to New York with him. And this will also compromise the development plan that the Jets supposedly still have in mind for Zach Wilson, because now you're going to have to teach him a whole new offensive system. The Jets are going to be the Jets.
if you got a business that has different entities about it, like a public relations entity and a business relations entity and a business develop entity and a football side of things and all that, let the experts run each of those. Try not to just sit up in the stands and say, you know what, I don't like our offense. Let's go fire that guy. If you got to let the football people run it. Otherwise, every time you have a bad game, you're going to be firing somebody and you never get better. The Jets were on it. They were on it until they get and they missed on a quarterback in the first round. Okay, it happens. Everybody does that, but don't like blow it up. Go get a guy that can function and attack that problem. Don't make more problems. Because you still got the quarterback problem now. And you're going to make it harder to do because you got to teach a new offense. It's crazy.
Yep.
It's crazy.
That's why the Jets are going to be the Jets. Because they can't find continuity if their life depended on it.
This last offseason, we sat right here. I said, listen, we all missed a holiday. We couldn't make fun of the Jets draft. They were getting it together. They had good draft picks. They got some talented young players.
Garrett Wilson might be the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year.
They were like, wow, the Jets got better, and they did. And now you're going to just blow it up.
You're screw it up all over again.
You're just going to blow it all up on that side of the ball.
Jets are going to
because
be
you
Jets.
Still got the problems. You really think play calling was what Zach Wilson's problem was? Play calling?
I don't.
What are you drunk?
He might be. Who knows?
Good grief! Play calling? You think the offense is broken because Zach Wilson looks like that? No. Zach Wilson can't play. That's the problem with your offense. Golly, the Jets. Man, I am so glad I'm not a Jet fan. Yeah. That's a rough life right there,
that
man.
That is a rough life.
That is a rough life.
I got two high school buddies who can attest to it.
They were getting it on track months and months on end. They were like signing the right guys. Their defense is scary. Their defense is really legit.
Could argue it's championship caliber.
They are really good on that side of the ball. Now they're going to blow it up. What are they doing?
I don't know.
And listen, Robert Saleh can coach. I like the guy.
I got a lot of respect for him. Coaching hire since Herm Edwards.
Yeah.
For the Jets.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Let's watch them. They're going to draft like Cole Strange. They're going to go off the rails. Okay. They are going to go off the rails now.
Wouldn't be the first time.
You'd have to go way off the rails. Way off the rails. They couldn't have done it better last year.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. Zach Wilson, if Zach Wilson's a complete bust, in which they're saying, no, he's got a chance. Okay, whatever. Even so, there are quarterbacks out there available now. David Carr. You know, guys like that. I mean, Russ Wilson moved. You got a chance at finding somebody with some gas in the tank or somebody just that, like, you know what? This guy's going to be good for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, Brady's going to be up for grabs. You could trade for Lamar Jackson. I mean, goodness gracious. There's some guys out there you can get better right away. It's not the coordinator, really?
Really? Apparently, it's going to happen.
Oh, man.
Let's get back to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And we go to Steve in Amherst next. Steve, there you are. What do you got for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Good afternoon, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. So I should have a couple things. You know, one about the game coming up. I feel like as a Bills fan right now, it's tough. It's a tough situation, and I don't want to play victim at all here, but it's a tough situation to be put into. Because you don't want Tua to play because he's more dangerous to play against as a quarterback, but you also want him to be better off with his health, you know? So people look like, oh, Bills fans are rooting for Tua to not play. No, we want him to have a career, honestly. Like, I want him to do well, and he's a genuine guy. You can tell that very clearly, and we just wish the best for him. So I think the game will be a lot different and a little easier for the Bills without Tua. Obviously, they'll still have their challenges, but, I just wish Tua well. Another thing that I wanted to mention, it's really, really fun now that the Bills are in the playoffs every year. because it really helps the Buffalo winter go by faster when you have games that you can watch and enjoy all the way into late January, sometimes February. So that's really exciting. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up, going back to the Damar Hamlin scare, which feels like a lifetime ago already because it's just unbelievable. I feel like the whole thing really humanized a lot of people for us as fans that are watching shows, that are listening, that are watching players. It humanized players. It humanized media. When I say that, I mean like watching Rex Ryan on ESPN break down, watching Dan Orlovsky pray on TV, watching Josh Allen cry in a, you know, in a press conference. It's just really appreciated that, you know, we're able to, you know, sometimes just listen to you guys and forget that you're human too. And you're, you know, you're feeling all, everything we're feeling. And, you know, as same with players. And, you know, I just wanted to say how much I appreciate that that came out of it. And also now that we can actually enjoy football, knowing that the great news came out today that he went home from the hospital. So good news is coming around and I love it. And it's very exciting. You know, to hear about Damar Hamlin, and it's also, again, exciting to see the Bills in the playoffs with the hopefuls of Super Bowl. But, guys, thank you for everything you do. I appreciate you guys more than you can imagine. So have a great rest of your day, and I will hang up and listen, guys.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, we're there are times where we come on after bad losses and other stuff, and sometimes we feel like therapists with some of the phone calls we take, and we try to help each other through those low times when, you know, maybe the Bills – don't measure up to expectations. That's happened very few and far between this season, as we know. And then you get real humanizing stories that make you remember the fragility of life, like we had with Damar Hamlin a little over a week ago. But, yeah, I like the way we kind of work with the listeners and the fan base to try to help each other through some of this stuff. And I think we were doing a lot of that last week, not just us, but, you know, you guys out there as well. I got to believe there are a lot of Bills fans leaning on each other, checking in with each other. Hey, you know, what, you know, wanting to know what's going on with tomorrow and all that stuff. So it's great that we're all able to kind of help each other in a way. So, yeah, good on you, Bills Mafia, for doing that for each other. And if there's some small part we can play too, we're happy to do it. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock here, so we do have to take a break. When we come back in hour number two, we're going to be joined in studio by a man who got one of the three interceptions in last week's game, Tremaine Edmonds, set to join us here in hour number two on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome to hour number two here on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Practice is just about ending. We'll have Tremaine Edmonds here in studio in short order after his performance last week that included an interception, a quarterback hit, seven tackles, and three pass breakups. The Condor, man. Try throwing over that guy. Best of luck.
We say this all the time, and people talk about, you know, his physical stature, and it's significant. In a game that's full of guys who are freaks of nature, he's a freak of nature among freaks of nature. He's really unbelievably long.
He's like that guy from the Fantastic Four.
Yes.
Or he's Stretch Armstrong.
I remember seeing at some point during the regular season where a quarterback, it was this season, the Bills were playing a team. I can't even remember whether it was on the road or at home. And it was from behind the quarterback, the opposing quarterback. And he's looking down the field, and Tremaine's running with the receiver like a tight end down the field.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no way to throw it around him to get it there. He's not even in perfect position, but there's just no way. The guy's covered just by Tremaine running in the area because he's so long and his body, he takes up so much space at that position. Mm-hmm. It really, it really makes it hard to make those throws when he's in the area because he's got such a reach. We saw it in the this game last week in the Patriots where he was covering the flat receiver and the quarterback tries to throw the slant behind him. He just reached up.
Snared it.
It was like 8.5 feet in the air. He just like almost pulled it in. I've got this written on the whiteboard in our office. The Bills draft traits.
Yeah, elite physical traits.
And Tremaine is that.
Oh, yeah.
He is a – he walks in the room like, man, what sport does that guy play? Well, it's Tremaine Edmonds. Oh, yeah, there is professional football. Because there's a – you know, he looks like a hoops player. He's so big, so long, yeah. You know, and athletic. Just, you know, he has been a guy and Bills, he's been a little polarizing for Bills fans. They kind of have expected more of him. But I think one of the things you got to remember, the Bills knew how they were going to ask him to play. And it's not the same as a normal middle linebacker in other defense. Like he's not, they're not asking him to play like Mike Singletary or Dick Butkus or
Ray Lewis
even. He's got a different role in a different defense than those guys played. He's in nickel all the time.
Yeah.
And I think the team really loves the way he has played from day one. Absolutely, day one. They have not been polarized on him. They have loved him since day one.
So we'll catch up with Tremaine in due course here in just a little bit. In the meantime, we get back to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, where we're asking you, you know Tua's not playing, but are there any other lingering concerns that you have in this matchup with the Dolphins? You can let us know. We got an open line for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. In the meantime, we check in with Patrick in Rhode Island. What do you got for us, Patrick? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Real quick, I went to school, Steve, with your son, Luke. What a stand-up dude. So happy to see him doing well.
Thanks.
Just really quick, you got to be so proud. I just think it comes down to something Steve said a little bit earlier about making mistakes yourself. So for me, it comes down to turnovers and tackling seem to be a little bit of a problem in both games against this team. I'll hang up and listen to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, tackling was definitely an issue in the last game as far as stopping their run game. I mean, 188 yards is what they rolled up on the ground, and you know, there are times, there seem to be a couple of games each year where the Bills' tackling is inconsistent and opponents can roll up some yards on them. And I'm telling you right now, with Skylar Thompson as the 4-cast starter, you better believe they're going to try to run the football to help that kid out.
Right. Yeah,
get
no
him in
doubt.
Short down and distance on – just get to like 3rd and 2 or 3
right.
And hope the kid can make a play for
it. Anytime it's 3rd and 5 or less, they're going to be feeling good. It's just one quick completion on 1st or 2nd down to get them there and not take any negative plays. I mean, that's going to be huge, too, for them. Give them a chance. And punting won't be the worst thing ever.
Right.
They'll just try and get a stop on the Bills. No question about it. And you're right. We've been down this road a lot talking about the Bills and around the National Football League tackling in general. It's my contention that the league has changed so much, even since I played in the 25 years I've been out. It's changed dramatically. A lot of it's player safety and rule changes. Players are not allowed to tackle the way they were in my day and age. I mean, it was always lead with your head, knock them off their feet with the impact rather than wrap them up and all of that. Now, it's about tackling the football itself. They're not tackling the guy with the ball. They're trying to grab the ball away from the guy who's got it. That leads to a lot of broken tackles, a lot of spinning around and, you know, pushing the pile, keeping the guy on his feet, not getting him off his feet, but keeping him on his feet so you can get the ball away and it's live while you do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how football has changed in the years since I played. It's not so much about the big hits and all of that stuff. It's about getting the ball back. And you do that by grabbing it. And when you grab the ball, sometimes you miss the guy who's got it, and he breaks the tackle and goes on for more yardage. Teams are not caught up in yards given up as much as they are opportunities to get the ball back being taken advantage of. So that's really what the crux of how the game has changed in the current day and age, and that's why the tackling for old guys like me and some fans out there who see the same thing, tackling is like, wow, they stink. They don't know how to tackle.
No.
Well, It's a different game, and they train them differently now than they did when I played. Tackling is about the ball, not about the man or the yards you're giving up.
We saw that in the New England game last week. Jonathan Jones comes up and does a peanut punch on Devin Singletary,
right.
Forces the ball out. He had no interest in tackling Devin Singletary. He saw him carrying it, not up tight on his body, and just went in there and punched the football right out of his hands. Turnover. More and more teams are focusing and coaching that than sound fundamental tackling. So you're right. And, yeah, turnovers are a problem, and that's the way that Buffalo has beaten themselves a couple of times this season. Even the Jets game, which you can make as many arguments as you want, that the Jets played well enough and consistently enough to win that game back in Week 9, but you can't forget that the Bills had a turnover in the red zone, and they had a turnover inside their own 20-yard line, which led to a field goal, and I think they scored a field goal on the other takeaway.
And it took away
and the Jets win by three.
Right.
So that's what you got. We're going to take a break here because when we come back, we will have one Tremaine Edmonds joining us in studio. We'll catch up with the linebacker next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. We'll be joined by Tremaine Edmonds momentarily here. In the meantime, we seek out some of your other thoughts on the tweet sheet where we were asking you, where do the Dolphins' threats lie in this matchup, knowing Tua is out for Sunday's game? And leading us off on the tweet sheet, which is presented by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills, Daniel says, the threat of Hill and Waddle still remain. If they can manufacture ways to get the ball in their hands, this game is still a great challenge.
I agree.
They just have to find different ways to get it in their hands, knowing Skylar Thompson is not going to find them as consistently as Tua does.
Yeah.
I mean, the bottom line is he's not as efficient a passer as Tua is, who led the league in passer rating, by the way.
And as good as Mike Gesicki is in the passing game, Mike Gesicki ain't going to beat you. Tyreek and Jalen can.
Yeah.
Gesicki's a good player, and he's had some good games against the Bills, but, you know, Tyreek's a game wrecker.
Well, and so the Bills is Jalen know that Waddle. All too well, particularly in playoff games.
Right. So I agree with him. If Mike McDaniel can manufacture some way to get the ball in their hands, hand it to them, for goodness sake. I mean, I think you got to do it.
Well, I think they will. I think there'll be a lot of, you know, wide receiver screens, bubble screens, now routes, quick slants, you know, easy half-field reads for Skylar Thompson. So he can get the ball in those guys' hands, because that's the best way for them to not only stay in the game, but even have a sniff of, you know, pulling out a win here in Buffalo. Incidentally, the Bills under Sean McDermott are 6-0 at home against the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, Josh plays well against them.
Yes,
and he always has for whatever reason, and even in the game where the Dolphins came in and the Bills were coasting in 2020, they lumped them up and put hung a half a hundred on them.
Yes, they did.
And so, yeah, it was one of those kind of situations. But we'll see. I still agree. They've got game wreckers, and if they can get the ball in their hands, the game could be wrecked.
Yeah, and, you know, you also have to expect desperation. There could be a few extra wrinkles here and there. Oh, look at this. Look at this. He's doing the Chris Collinsworth Monday Night Football slide in here on the chair. Look at that, right? Like the pregame. You got a broadcasting career in your future.
We were talking early in the game. Micah Hyde was sitting right where you're at,
right,
like 3 weeks ago, saying, no, they're protecting me from myself. They said, no way. I ain't never going to. And now he's out there.
Steve's hot. He's hot. He told him right on the practice field. You lied to me.
He says, you lied to me.
Yeah.
Got to feel good to have him out there, though.
Oh, my God, man. That's my guy. And just to see how far he's came, man, just to see the amount of work that he's put in, I know it feels good to him. Definitely feels good for the guys that's on the team. But it has to feel even better for him, man, just to know how far he's came, the dedication that he's put in, the hard work that he's put in. I know it's a blessing just to be out there, you know, with his guys again.
Right.
We got Tremaine Edmonds with us, and that's the voice that you're hearing there, joining us here live in studio. Fresh off the field interviews brought to you by Austin Air, the official clean air provider of the Buffalo Bills. Tremaine, the first two times you played Miami, Tua was on the field as their quarterback. That is not going to be the case this time around. How much extra study time does that give you? Because this is an opponent that you guys feel somewhat familiar with because you played him twice, but now the quarterback's different. Right. Tell me how that changes your preparation this week.
You know, I think it doesn't really matter how many times you play a team. I think each time you play them, they're going to, you know, present different challenges. And I think that's the same thing going into this game, we understand. And, you know, obviously with a new quarterback, it's going to be a little – probably be a little bit different, you know what I mean? But you just got to prepare to your best way that you can and trust that we do on film. But I think a lot of things go back to, like, our fundamental. Like, how good are we fundamentally, you know what I mean? And making sure that we execute at a high level and making sure that we have a good grasp of what we want to get done defensively.
It's kind of like it starts with us type of thing.
For sure.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about, you know, you got three losses on the season. And, you know, the Jets played a really good game against you. But you look back to the first Miami game where you couldn't get that kickoff at the end to win it.
Right. It ran out of time.
And then the game against Minnesota where you had two game stoppers. One, Josh, all you got to do is do a quarterback sneak for no gain, you win. And then Cam, all he has to do is knock that ball down and you win. Two game stoppers, you couldn't get that. So the losses you've had, most of them are because you know, your team. Is that what you're worried? I mean, just it's you guys doing what you're supposed to do, and there's not too many teams that can actually are good enough to beat you.
You know, I don't think the word to use is worry. You know, I got extreme confidence in my guys just because I see the work that we put in each and every day. Playing this sport, I mean, sometimes things are going to happen, you know what I mean? And obviously things that we don't plan for, but you just got to keep going. And I think guys did a good job of responding to those challenges, man, because those were times that I know a lot of us want back. Not just those guys, man, but, you know, it's a collective thing. I don't think just one or two plays, you know, determines the outcome of a football game. It's a lot of plays into a game. But, you know, it's just a couple that probably stand out. But as we know, players, as people that know the game, it's a lot of plays that, you know, collectively, you know, determines the outcome of games. But, you know, nothing in the past is going to dictate what's going to happen in the future, man. So our eyes are forward and, you know, our head down and working, man. We're taking this thing one day at a time.
I know as focused as you guys are on Miami now, because that's what's in front of you, I just need to know. So last week, first half, Mac Jones is completing balls. Like, he's making some plays for them, and they're staying in the football game. Second half, Coach Frazier's kind of mixing things up, commits to coverage a little bit, throws, you know, little pressure packages here and there. But in coverage, you guys are getting your hands on balls. I mean, you even got one. Your coverage assignment isn't even the target on the play. You're racing to the flat to cover the guy in the flat, and Mac's trying to put it over you. To get it, and you're just like, oh, all right, I'll get a hand on that.
Right.
And then you get two tip drills for picks, you and Matt. What changed in the second half there where it just seemed like you guys were just keyed in on where Mac was going with the ball?
You know, I think, you know, any game that you play, you know, obviously a lot of teams are scripted to, like, whether it's a first 15 or whatever it may be. And I think it's just about us making sideline adjustments. I think our coaches did a good job with that. And, you know, players did a good job of understanding what we were trying to get accomplished. And it was really just not no panic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, things are going to happen in the course of a game. It's no game is going to be perfect. So it's about, you know, looking at what you see out there, making the necessary assignments, making necessary adjustments, and talking about it on the sideline. You know, no panic button was pushed. And guys understood that, you know, hey, they got us this play, but let's rebound and come back the next drive and get a stop.
How much film? I mean, Skylar Thompson's kind of an unknown commodity, but you have got some film on him. And is there differences that you notice in what Miami thinks of Skylar Thompson of their offense when he's on the field, rather than Tua or rather than Teddy Bridgewater? If Skylar Thompson's the guy, even though there's limited film, do they give you any kind of philosophical tips as to what they're asking him to do that they don't want him to do that they will ask Tua or they will ask Teddy Bridgewater? You know what I'm saying? Can you get an idea of what they're doing offensively with Skylar Thompson that they're saying, well, they don't want him to do this, this, or this?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, as we continue to gather information throughout the week, you know, I think a lot of those tales will come out. Obviously, you know, present different challenges just as far as from quarterback, from Tua, Bridgewater, and him now.
Right.
You know, each quarterback is different. You know, how they want to attack the defense is going to be different. How they want to attack us is going to be different, you know. So I think at the end of the day, man, a lot of it is just going to come back down to how well can we execute. You know what I mean? I could talk about it all day I want about, you know, the opponent, but a lot of it comes back down to us and how well we execute defensively.
The Bills and the Dolphins have met four times in the postseason in their history. This is meeting number five. I don't know if you're aware of this. Your dad played in the first one. Bills-Dolphins, 1990 here. Bills beat the Dolphins 44-34. I don't know. I mean, I know you guys don't have a whole lot of conversations about football, or maybe you do with your dad on the phone after each week. Maybe he calls you after every game. I don't know.
For sure.
But has he ever told you about what that
Dolphins-Bills
playoff rivalry was like? Because he played in that first one.
Yeah, he definitely told me about it. We definitely had some conversation. I wish you had some footage, man. I want to check him out and see what he's doing out there.
I have the stats right here. He had three catches for 21 yards in that game back in 90. You can hit him up on that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get on him.
A couple weeks later, he and I were in the Pro Bowl together.
Yeah.
I played in three Pro Bowls with your dad.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Nah, we always talk about it. And I know, you know, when I first got drafted, that's all he used to talk about was how the rivals used to be back in the day.
Yeah.
And so I knew when I got drafted here, you know, the support and just the fan base and just the rivalry upon Bills Nation and Bills Mafia that I was going to be a part of. And I mean, to this day, he still talk about it. He get excited every time we play Miami just because of, you know, that's the team he used to play on. And he understand how big of a game it is. He understands, you know, the rivalry of the game. And, you know, it's always a smile. It's always a spark of a conversation every time we talk about it.
Yeah. Are they getting up here for that?
Weekend? Yeah, he'll be here.
I'm sure he will. I'm not surprised.
Pops will be here. Pops will be here for sure.
I hope I cross paths with him. I haven't seen him since training camp down in Carolina when we were down there a couple of years ago. This rivalry is different because it's a playoff game and it's a division opponent. You're familiar. You've been playing. You and Josh, you guys have been playing them for your whole careers. You know these guys. I mean, it's no new thing. Even for when you go down to Miami, it's like that same locker room. You're kind of familiar with the hotel, all of that stuff. How does that change? How comfortable can you get? And you can kind of transpose it. And when you go down there and play a division game, you've done it a bunch.
Right.
It's almost like not a home game because of the crowd, but there is a comfort level.
Well, not necessarily for me. I don't look at it as how many times you play the opponent because this is the NFL. Right. I mean, I'm never going to be comfortable each time I step on that field because I understand, you know, games are won, you know, with the small details. You know what I mean? There's a couple plays here, a couple plays there. So I'd never be the type to say that I'm comfortable, man. I'm always on edge just as far as understanding what I got to get done, not just me, but understanding what we have to get done as a team. No time you step on that field is going to be an easy chess match, man. You got to continue just to ball out, you know, put that work in throughout the week, day in, day out, and have that mindset, man, because it's not easy, you know what I mean?
Right.
And no game is going to be easy. I don't care if we played them five times in 1 year. I mean, each time is going to present a new challenge and a challenge that we look forward to. So we just got to have that mindset to come out there and continue the ball, man. And no matter how many times we played them, no matter how many times I played them since I've been here, each time is different. And we got to continue to trust ourselves, continue to trust our game plan, and go out there and ball at the end of the day.
Last one I got for you, Tremaine, is how, you know, you always hear that common comment, turnovers come in bunches. You get three last week, all via interception, you, Matt, and then Trey.
Mm-hmm.
First part of the question, how much does that help as a springboard? There's no guarantees you're going to get takeaways every game, but when you can get a few going into the playoffs, that's got to be a nice springboard, right? And then part two of the question, seeing Trey making a play like that, knowing he's trying to ramp back up to being the all-pro guy that he is.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely a confidence booster. I think, you know, just being a competitor, you know, like a lot of guys are on the team, like everyone is on the team. I mean, now it's like who's going to be the next one to make a play? And for the guys that got picks, I know, including myself, my mindset is now let's go do it again, right? We're not comfortable. We're not satisfied with just making one. Now it's about let's go see if we can really, you know what I mean, let's go see how many we can do this week. So I think that's just the talk around the locker room. Now guys are hungry, you know, to make that play. Now guys are looking at each other like who's going to be that guy? And, I mean, I was excited to see Trey, man, just because I know the work that he's put in. Like, every time that, you know, I was in the building and I saw him in there rehabbing, man, he had a mission on his mind. And that was a return out there with his brothers. And just to see him come away with that, I mean, it put a smile on my face, and I know it put a smile on his face and his family's face, because obviously when you have an injury like that, man, there's a lot of mental roller coasters you go on. So just to see that happen, man, I mean, I felt good for him, and I'm extremely happy for him. And, you know, he's back to work, and I know he want to get a grab another.
Yeah, we've been talking about, you know, this Miami team and a lot of conversation about Tua being in, now he's out. Teddy Bridgewater, and we've been talking about Skylar Thompson, the whole crew. But the two guys that are there that are unlike anybody else, Tyreek and Jalen.
Right.
You've got a lot of experience with Tyreek. You know, you've seen the Chiefs with Tyreek, and you've played him twice. The Dolphins with Tyreek. He's a game breaker. I mean, he's a different guy. Mm. And Jalen Waddle brings something unique as well. Those guys, you would think, and for us, it seems like, wow, the Dolphins got to find a way to get those guys the football. How does that change your mindset when the game breakers for a club are guy you could hand it to them or throw it to them, but they're not like running backs. It's not like Travis Kelce in Kansas City. It's those guys out wide. How does that change your philosophy or your mindset?
I think it's about having awareness, understanding where the players are at all times when you're out there on the field, and understanding threats by formation. You know what I mean? There's a lot of intel that you can pick up as, you know, where are they putting this receiver at on this play? Is he, you know what I mean? Different type of tells that you can pick up. And I think those little small details are, you know, what's going to help players out, what's going to help our team out when you play against guys like that. Obviously, dynamic guys that can make plays with the football. And, you know, I think just those keys and a lot of that stuff comes with the film study you put in throughout the week. The
problem is that only prepares you what they did before. Now you got to figure out what they're going to do next,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, that's
exactly.
A problem, right? That's always that's the holy grail, right? You're trying to find what they're going to do next, not what they did last week.
100%. And that's what I said, as far as just picking up little tugs you can pick up, trusting yourself, trusting your instincts, trusting what you saw on film. And then, like you said, there's going to be a lot of things they give us that we haven't seen.
Right.
But that just goes back down to your fundamentals. Do what we've been doing. Do what our fundamentals tell us to do. And you know guys will be fine.
Listen, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. We know you got a busy week and a lot on your plate. So thanks for making some time for us and for the fans that are listening and watching. Good luck on Sunday. Keep those takeaways coming.
Yes, all right. Appreciate that. Thank you.
And tell your dad, 3 catches, 21 yards.
Yeah, I'm on it. I'm on it for sure.
touchdowns.
We will go from Tremaine to one of his teammates who's at the post-practice podium. It's Josh Allen addressing the media right now.
I mean, it's an awesome feeling. You know, we're just hoping that he's getting his rest and his recovery. And as a team, we're extremely happy. Not yet. I know some guys were chomping at the bit to go see him, but, you know, against doctor's orders, just making sure that he's, like I said, getting his rest and recovery and taking it slow and obviously just trying to get back to being himself. So we'll take all the time that we need, but hope he knows the guys are ready to see him.
Josh, can you go back to 2019, remember your first playoff game against Houston and where you've come to now, and is there anything that you've kind of learned along the way about the process of this week? This game?
Yeah, I mean, it's one week season from here on out. It's win or go home. We understand that. At the end of the day, you know, come Sunday, it's the only thing that matters is scoring more points than the other team. So, you know, trying to have a good week of practice, putting our best foot forward, making sure that we're holding ourselves to our own standard, you know, and obviously taking it day by day, but, you know, everything that we're doing is in hopes to win on Sunday.
Josh, you just mentioned there ultimately scoring more points than the other team is the thing that matters most. When you came into this season, the expectations were so high in terms of preseason Super Bowl favorites and all of that. And I'm just wondering, was there any sort of impact on the team knowing that those expectations were set as high as they were?
No, we don't have any feelings from the outside. You know, as a team internally, you know, the goals that we wanted to accomplish are still in front of us. We have a chance to do what we set out to at the beginning of the year. But it all starts Sunday and starts this week. So, again, just trying to have a good week of practice, trying to stick to our routine. But, again, it's the biggest game of our season. It's the next one, and we understand the implications of the playoffs. This is everything that we wanted. Obviously, getting into the playoffs gives us a chance to win the Super Bowl, and that's our main goal. But, like I said, right now it's Sunday, 1 o'clock.
With all the emotions out of the way, with most of the emotions out of the way after Sunday, with DeMar home, and I know the focus still is on him getting better, but do you feel, and having had a few days of a break, Do you feel it's allowed the team to have an emotional reset to a certain extent? You could put some of that behind you and look forward now fully.
I think so. Coach gave us the last couple of days off, and just I think that was good for guys to kind of get away and like you said, mentally reset. At the same time, you know, DeMar hasn't left our minds, and we're still praying for him, and you know, we want to continue to see him get better each and every day. But again, this team's got a lot of love for each other. When we go on that field, we play for each other. So we're going to need to do that come Sunday.
This is your seventh playoff game, I think, and you seem to approach these like with a pretty calm attitude. Same with the primetime games, Thanksgiving. You know, what do you think perspective do you have that, besides maybe throwing up, that allows you to have a let it rip attitude?
We know that it. You know, if we don't win, we go home. So just trying to do everything in my power, preparation-wise, and then come game time, doing what's asked of me and just trying to put myself and my teammates in good positions to succeed and trying to be an extension of Coach Dorsey and, you know, run the play, as he calls it, and lead this offense to score points. And that's all I really can do is do my job and, everybody on the field trusting each other and, just trying to lead guys that way as well.
All right, so that's Josh Allen addressing the media after practice. We're going to take a break here because when we come back, we will have Micah Hyde addressing the media after his first practice since neck surgery. That happened today on the practice field. So Micah Hyde coming your way next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. We go to the postgame podium now, where Micah Hyde is addressing the media after having his first practice since undergoing neck surgery back in September.
No, realize, suspect that maybe you could be back during this season,
22-23. When did I know? I think waking up from surgery, I was, like I told you guys before, I was in a dark place. I'd never, experienced anything like that. And then right when I got back to moving around a little bit, the doctor said I started feeling real good after a couple weeks, feeling a lot better after a couple months. And then by, 3-4 months out, I'm going to feel amazing. And ever since he said that, I saw the light at the end of the tunnel. I figured I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to work every day to try to get back, because I want to be a part of what this team has and, what we're about to do. So, special group. I just want to be a part of it.
Sean said that you won't play this week, but do you feel like if you guys win this game, you got a good shot to get out there next week?
I got to be honest with you guys. It's still not on me. I felt good today, but it's not my decision. It's my doctor's. So I'm going to continue to do what I can do each and every day to put myself in position to help this team. And when the day comes that I get the okay, I'm gonna give it a go.
Have they given you a sense of like what hurdles you have to cross from a physical standpoint, mm-hmm. or to whatever degree your neck has to withstand whatever you face?
Well, as far as my neck goes in the recovery process, it's healed. Obviously, you understand that time is something that you also need, with what I had and timetable being, most of the time 6 months. Obviously, that puts me into March. So, just the more time, the better. But at the same time, I'm healed up. I feel great. I've had goals throughout the way that I've been reaching for myself. And, kudos to everybody in here from the training staff, especially Denny, strength staff, Hal Luther, the whole group in there, Emma, Joe, Mika, Joe Collins, just rehabbing each and every day. Sean, being just constant communication, my position coaches. And there's not, I can thank everybody in this building just because all the resources are here in front of me that once I had that idea and those goals in place to hopefully make it back for the playoffs, they open up all the doors for me to do so. And so here I am now. It's been it seems like it's been 2 years. It's only been a couple months. But like I said, I just want to be a part of what we have, and here we are.
Mike, what was today like?
Oh my gosh!
First day of school, kind of.
That's exactly what it was. I didn't sleep last night. I didn't sleep last night, and not because I was like nervous or anything. I was just too excited. I was too excited. I've been in all the meetings. I've been rehabbing every day. You know, it's just I've been a part of this thing for a while, and I just love these guys. I you know, I think everything happens for a reason. I think my situation was for a reason, and it's given me a different perspective on this game. You know, I'm grateful. I'm very, very grateful to be in the position that I am right now, and to see my teammates throughout this whole season, all the things that we have been through. You name it, the weather, the injuries, you know, D-Ham situation, just all this stuff. Just seeing my boys, my teammates, you know, go out there and continue to fight. It wouldn't be, you know, I have to make it. You know, I have to give it a go. I have to, and so. This is a special group. I've been saying it all along, and I'm just glad I can be a part of it today. I'm a dog-ass coach now. Do I want to coach in the future? I don't know about that. But yeah, I've been giving some guys some nuggets here and there. I wouldn't say our record indicates my coaching, but you know, every now and then I was giving some nuggets and just trying to help out, you know, my teammates when I could.
What do you say about the guys who filled in? From obviously Jaquan, Damar, Cam, Dean, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, we always preach all the time, next man in this building, and so guys have been, you know, in and out of the lineup, and obviously a guy like Jay Poe, just going out there each and every week and fighting through injuries, you know, we've had so much experience with each other throughout the last couple of years. For him, it's been a little more difficult too, just having, you know, other guys in and out of the role. But they did a phenomenal job. You know, D-Ham stepping in, you know, doing what he does, and just bringing a different element to that position was truly amazing. And I can't say enough about the guys that have been in, and obviously Dean in right now, and you know, trying to take it the rest of the way. So. I just love these guys, man. We have a special group, like I said, not just. You know, the team-wide, but in our safety room and in our secondary, we appreciate each other, and whoever's out there, it's your go. You know, the standard that we you know, have set forth years ago, and you got to go out there and you got to compete and you got to, you know, make plays.
Mike, not to say you weren't part of what's transpired over the past week and a half, but from not being on the field to see how your teammates, coaching staff, everybody. Weathered the emotions and then came out of this with a win and seemingly a closer bond.
Yeah, we were a close team already. We were a really close team already. And, you know, we've had guys in this organization for a while now, going on 6 years, at 6 years, 5 years. So we've been around each other for a long time. So we've already been close. But just, you know, what the situation that happened in Cincinnati with D-Ham, obviously, we were all shocked, and we didn't know what to think, what to do, and it was just, you know, even sitting here right now, I still can't believe what happened. Obviously, you know, D-Ham is recovering and all that, and just to see all my teammates, all the coaches, everybody just rally around each other, the whole league rally around us, to be honest, and D-Ham, and so it was so cool to see just, you know, all the love that everyone has been getting, and. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of love already in this locker room. It's just made us stronger.
All right, that's Micah Hyde addressing the media, saying him returning to play is ultimately not his decision. It will be his doctor's decision. And when his doctor gives him the okay, that's when he'll give it a go. He doesn't know when that is. But other players after practice today commenting on Micah Hyde's return to the practice field, Mitch Morse called it infectious. Knowing the leader that Micah is, how big an impact can that have, even if he's just back on the practice?
Yeah, it just picks everybody up. It's like you feel like you're getting better. You've gotten better right away. Even if Micah's not taking reps kind of thing, it's a great place to be mentally. You feel like you're growing instead of just waiting for the playoffs to start. It's a great mindset.
Awesome great stuff. Mindset, yeah. More positive news, including Damar back home with his family here in Buffalo. We will see you tomorrow at 1 o'clock for more as this team gets ready for playoffs on Sunday.